I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Tomorrow, the UN Security Council meets to debate multilateralism and the peaceful settlement of disputes as war engulfs this region, with Anglo-American armed Israeli airstrikes pounding Lebanon, Syria and Gaza, where the genocide continues. Since May, UK-US EU-armed Israel has killed over 800 Palestinians at so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation weaponized aid sites as famine takes hold of Gaza's besieged and starving population. Meanwhile, Trump and Netanyahu, instead of ceasefire, appear to have organized creation of a concentration camp in the ruins of Rafah near Egypt. Concentration camp was what former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert called it. Joining me now from Tel Aviv is Avi Melamed, a former Israeli intelligence official who was a senior advisor to Ehud Olmert. Avi, thanks so much for coming on. I want to get on to Gaza, of course, but in the past few days, and I should say this has been recorded before any imminent restarting of wars as regards Yemen with Israel, Iran with Israel, Lebanon with Israel, and certainly Syria with Israel. What was your reaction when you saw Netanyahu's trial interrupted by Netanyahu's decision to strike the heart of Damascus? The Syrian government, it might not be there by the time this is actually being broadcast, said, strongly condemns in the harshest terms the treacherous Israeli aggression that targeted government institutions, flagrant assault. Jalani, the old ISIS Al-Qaeda man, no longer friends with the Israeli government?
I don't think they have been ever friends with the Israeli government. Let's remember, Jalani is coming from the hub of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. We all know what ISIS and Al-Qaeda stands for. So among different aspects of their ideology, they're also very hostile towards not only the state of Israel, by the way, but also towards Jews generally.
And to Muslims. I think most of Islam would say, well, in fairness, there are those famous pictures of no less than on the Golan Heights, he's called Jalani, where Netanyahu, of course, treated ISIS and Al-Qaeda fighters in the war on Assad. I mean, surely as an intelligence official, as a former intelligence official, you recognize that Israel was intimately involved in the overthrow of Assad by funding and supporting ISIS and Al-Qaeda, as well as Turkey.
I don't know that I would necessarily wholly
agree with your observation. There are photographs of Netanyahu with them.
Look, I want to be very clear about it. What led to the downfall of Assad regime in the end of the day was the collapse of the Iranian-backed axis, particularly the defeat of the Hezbollah. We should remember that in the end of the day, the major power that enabled Jalani to take power in Syria was Turkey, Erdogan. We all know that Turkey is and Erdogan is coming from the Sunni Islamic camp, similar to Jalani, even though Jalani come from a different branch of the Sunni Islamic radical ideology. It was Erdogan in the end of the day, meaning the Turkish military that supported the HTS, the Turkish military that basically controlled parts of the northern part of Syria, that enabled Jalani and his people in the end of the day to launch this offensive in the end of 2024, and within 2 weeks to bring down Assad regime in Syria.
You've previously praised Erdogan's geopolitical smarts many times. How far do you think he'll go to defend? And I understand that for our viewers, this is being recorded before Jalani may have already left. How far would he go to defend these ex-Al-Qaeda ISIS people in the face of opposition, not only from Israel, but obviously also maybe from Donald Trump, because they were reportedly reconsidering the terrorism designation. How far would Turkey go to oppose Israel, the United States, Iran, it has to be said, because in a way, Iran and Israel on the same side of this.
Well, indeed, Erdogan here is in a very difficult position, because remember, Turkey is the second largest member of NATO. And so Erdogan has to, you know, run between the drops, the raindrops, so to speaking. We know that Erdogan is a very shrewd politician. He knows how to monetize situations. I think this is a very challenging situation for him from different perspectives. I think that at this point, he will wait to see what the exact developments are following the events in Syria. But I would also mention in that regard something very significant that we should take into consideration when we talk about Erdogan, and these are the Kurds in Syria. Definitely Seemingly, the last couple of days, just recently, there has been sort of like an agreement or announcement of the PKK that they are basically laying down their weapons. And there was this symbolic act of Kurdish fighters laying down their weapons in the northern part of Iraq.
I should just say the U.S. also withdrew funding under the new Trump administration. But go on, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that one of the major things that Erdogan has to very closely monitor and look following these recent developments in Syria particularly is in the context of the Kurdish autonomy in the northeast part of Syria. In other words, there are many different variants, moving parts here in this picture that Erdogan definitely has to take into consideration. I don't think that he's facing any easy choice in front of him.
Now, let's get to Israel, of course, which has bombed four capitals in this region, Sana'a, Beirut, Damascus, and Tehran in the past 6 weeks. No word on the missing 400 kilos of uranium, highly enriched uranium. Is that a big topic there? Do you think Netanyahu was partly doing the Damascus operation as a method of distraction? What's the mood there in Israel after having been bombed in the past few weeks? Perhaps more bombed than ever in its short history.
Well, what we see is a very dramatic shift in the Israeli strategic policy. To put it in a nutshell, here is the essence of the change. Prior to October 7, the Israeli strategic policy, security policy, was to a large extent characterized by restraint and containing.
In certain that has places. But go on, yeah. Obviously not restraint when it comes to Lebanon and to Palestine.
It's been very restrained because, just as a reminder, the Hezbollah located two tents in the Israeli territory. That was before October 7. And Israeli government did not take military actions, though it could, because it was very clear that the Hezbollah was violating the United Nations formal line. Israel did not do that because it was part of this Israeli hesitant to take such a decisive action. And by the way, it was the same in the context of Gaza. But just the same, following October 7, what we see today is a total change of the Israeli strategic security policy. And to make it very short, I would say that if before October 7, it was first about let's think and talk about it and contemplate it, and maybe then we have to shoot, we'll shoot. Today, it's the opposite. First shooting and then talking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what your feelings were about the failure of intelligence as regards October the 7th. But as I said, I quoted your old boss, Ehud Olmert, and he's been very clear to say Israel is now close to civil war. And obviously Netanyahu's coalition is now minority government leader. His government might be over by the time this has been broadcast. His context for calling Israel out as at civil war has been Netanyahu's undermining of Israeli institutions, the sacking of Shin Bet's boss, Ronen Bar. I don't know what you thought of Ronen Bar's sacking, the head of Shin Bet, the equivalent to Britain's MI5 or the US FBI. Is it close to civil war, Israel?
No, I don't think so. Look, Israel is going through a very significant political crisis. It's very clear. But I don't think that we are going closer to a civil war. I think that there is a need to understand the many layers of the Israeli fabric, and lacking the understanding of those layers, obviously, kind of like I would say, compromised your ability to try to evaluate what's going to happen ahead. We are in a very significant political crisis, but I don't think that we are heading towards a civil war.
I mean, the economy is clearly in ruins. I saw the Eilat port shut down in the past few days, complete cessation of operations from Sunday. What's your understanding of the results of the Iranian attack on Israel? There have been reports, even in the Rupert Murdoch Wall Street Journal, that the volleys of missiles coming from Iran were increasingly reaching their targets at higher rates. And the targets that were hit, I mean, it says quite a lot about the Iron Dome, so-called Iron Dome, doesn't it? Obviously, the Weizmann Institute, the Bazan oil refinery, Haifa power plant, the IDF command center near Soroka Hospital, in Beersheba, the Hedera power plant. I don't know, was the IDF headquarters at Kira base hit? Was Nevatin Air Base hit? Telnof Air Base? I mean, the sourcing on this, obviously there is no freedom of speech in Israel. You have no freedom of speech there. You have a complete blackout of news about IDF soldiers that have been killed in the past few days, let alone the targets that were hit by Iran. What was your reaction? What did it feel like as a former Israeli intelligence official to realize the Iron Dome was failing?
Well, it may surprise you to know that unlike your very decisive observation, there is a freedom of speech. Actually, I've made my opinion very clear in different circles in Israel for the last couple of days. But just the same, you just said it in a way that I think has to be reiterated. You mentioned many targets in Israel. All of those targets, except maybe for one or two, were civilians. Now, here is the situation. You got an Iranian regime, very brutal one, that has been building these huge missiles capacities and drone capacities. This regime is not only threatening Israel, as you clearly very know, that regime attacked Saudi Arabia, and that regime attacked United Arab Emirates, and so on and so on. And that regime, after all those years of parades and military innovations, basically now engaged in a 12-day war with Israel, and he launched hundreds and hundreds of ballistic missiles and thousands of drones, because this is the best of its arsenal. We all know that the Mullah regime has been significantly defeated in this war. The region knows that. So with all due respect to the reports, of course, when you shoot down hundreds of missiles, of ballistic missiles, you refer to the Iron Dome, there is no 100% seal, but we are looking at a more than 90% capacities or successful performances of that system. And here is something to think about. Imagine that there was no Iron Dome and every single Iranian ballistic missile would have hit Israeli cities because it was launching and directly.
Only the hypersonic ones, in fairness.
No, not the hypersonic, the whole missiles and the drones. Imagine there was no any interceptive system. What do you think would be the repercussions and consequences of something like that?
Avi Melamed, I'll stop you there. More from the former Israeli intelligence official and author of Inside the Middle East, Entering a New Era, after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with former Israeli intelligence officer Avi Melamed. Avi, we were talking in part one about Iran and Israel, which might be at war by the time this is broadcast again. You did mention the United Arab Emirates. I should say the UAE. In the past few days, the foreign ministry said the UAE strongly condemns dangerous escalation in southern Syria, firmly denounced the Israeli airstrikes in the area. MBS, Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, on the record for calling out Israeli genocide, his word. The entire global south, of course, completely against Israel, as witnessed from the Bogota conference in Colombia and onwards. And all polls show a hatred of Israel right across Western Europe and in the United States, a majority with an unfavorable opinion of it. So Iran does have actually quite friendly relations, despite what one might think, with GCC countries. The foreign minister visits from time to time. If Iran is reportedly planning right now on its next target lists for Israel, how safe is Israel's Dimona nuclear weapons lab, the lab famously exposed by Mordecai Vanunu? Is it safe, given that I know you were giving me statistics in part one of 90% defense from Iron Dome? I should say even NATO press says 85% was more like it in the recent Iranian bombing of Israel.
I'm not so much concerned about Dimona. I'm much more concerned about the Iranian missiles that are targeting Tel Aviv or any other city. By the way, the Iranians also shot at Jerusalem, which, by the way, in Jerusalem, you got the Haram Sharif, which is the third holiest site of the Muslims, as you probably know. So
it's a particularly sensitive site in such a small area to hit either way. But then I suppose those that don't like your country would say, all's fair in war. I think Saladin is perhaps a precedent as regards destruction of holy sites in that sense. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, so I basically think that Muslims should be much more concerned about what's going to happen if an Iranian missile is going to hit Haram-e-Sharif in Jerusalem.
No, but Avi, come on. You know the entire Muslim world is watching the pictures from Gaza. I mean, in the UAE, I've got here Gaza kids queuing up for medical supplements killed every day. The entire Arab world, the Muslim world, yes, up to Indonesia and so on. Everyone can see what's going on. Those countries that didn't like Iran, perhaps, they were cheering Iran on too. How safe is... you said Dimona you're fine with.
Again, as I said before, I'm much more concerned about the missiles that the Iranians are shooting in populated cities. Why? Because when such a missile is landing in a populated city like Tel Aviv, imagine that New York has been attacked with a missile, with a one ton of explosives. Think about the collateral damage. Think about the panic. Think about the destruction.
We understand, so, because we can see what Israel is doing to Gaza, a enclosed place of 2 million people, of course, even more densely populated than Israel. But I'm interested why you're not concerned about Dimona, because the radiation clouds from there, I mean, I know Israel didn't seem that overly concerned about hitting nuclear sites in Iran, which could have had a devastating impact if they'd hit Bushehr, famously. And that's why Israel presumably didn't target it. Why should we not be worried about Israeli nuclear weapons production sites being destroyed?
I don't know what's going on inside the Dimona, this place that you mentioned. I don't know if they're manufacturing their nuclear weapons or ice cream, but that's not the point. The point, you asked me if I'm concerned about Dimona, and I basically said, I'm not so much concerned about Dimona. I'm much more concerned about the Iranian missiles that are targeting massively civilian population.
Clearly, and as are all Israelis, obviously. I suppose the Dimona element points again to freedom of speech. It's obviously Israelis are not allowed to talk about the nuclear weapons program because of the lack of freedom of speech in Israel. But more importantly, perhaps, is now the desire by the Iranian public, perhaps against their own government, for nuclear weapons. We spoke to someone ahead of the Rio BRICS summit, where BRICS countries discussed the need for nuclear weapons now that deterrence theory has been thrown on its head. Clearly, Israel would not have attacked Iran if it had nuclear weapons. Is it your understanding that no one knows where the 400 kilos of highly enriched uranium that Iran has is, and that Iran may now be purchasing weaponry? And I mean, the Russian and Chinese cargo planes all in the past few days have been pouring into Tehran, but whether they may be getting it from North Korea.
I think that the Iranian people are very much concerned with water and electricity and food on their table, much more than...
I should say I lived in Iran for a while. I don't think they were very much confused. What? I think that's interesting that your view of Iran is that they have problems over food and water. Is that the kind of propaganda in Israel about Iran, this kind of petro superstate that has managed to survive sanctions since 1979, that clearly even NATO commentators, I think people even in your Israeli press, accept that Iran has never been more united in wanting to defend the Islamic Republic, let alone want to go further than Pezeshkian, their leader, who was seen by some to be over-conciliatory with Tucker Carlson in his interview. They want nuclear weapons. They want to be able to threaten Israel as soon as possible.
Look, we all know that the major threat of the Iranian people is not Israel. We know it's this Iranian regime. We all remember what happened with this regime killing...
I mean, that's your viewpoint. I'm talking about... what everyone is pretty normal, is most people would see that Israeli and United States bombing of Iran would result in a people that would be united around their system and government, just as I presume October the 7th united quite a few Israelis around Netanyahu, despite him being so hated. So what is Israel going to do now the U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran have resulted in a desire for nuclear weapons by Iran, the exiting of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is a necessity, after all, because the IAEA has been thrown out of Iran. What is Israel going to do now Iran is on the cusp of nuclear weapons?
Well, to the best of my reading, I think that the major concern of Israel and the United States, and by the way, of course, the Gulf states as well, as you all know, is not the Iranian people, it's the Iranian regime. We are not concerned about the so-called, what you mentioned, desire of the Iranian people.
Well, I don't think the Israeli, I don't think the Iranian government never wanted nuclear weapons, as seen by the constant to-ing and fro-ing with the IAEA. We're talking about the Iranian people wanting to protect themselves and wanting a deterrent in opposition to the views of Ayatollah Khomeini, who installed that fatwa saying it was theologically wrong to have nuclear weapons. Is there no recognition in Israel that Iran wants nuclear weapons now, the Iranian public?
No, I don't think that in Israel they view the Iranian people as the one that want weapons.
To protect themselves from Israel.
I think, as I said, as I stated before,
you just bombed. You just bombed Iran.
Yes, that's correct.
So it's perfectly natural for a population like Iran's to then say, we need nuclear weapons to deter Israel from doing this again, and the United States, which also has nuclear weapons like Israel.
Yes, but I think that, as I said before, I think that for the Iranian average people, it's much more significant to have water and electricity and gas.
Since when do Iranians not have water and electricity? It's the Israelis that don't have water and electricity. It's the synagogues in Israel that have to be guarded. The synagogues in Iran, they don't have to be guarded for anti-Semitism, do they? Jews in Iran are safe. Jews in Israel are not safe, which is arguably perhaps why 83,000, Israel now hides the figures, Jews are leaving the country, because it's not a safe country for Jews. What do you mean they need water and electricity? There's a demand for nuclear weapons from the Iranian people.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a different perspective on that issue, clearly. By the way, you know, in the
state... But you don't consider it, because Netanyahu and you, presumably, have talked about the desire for nuclear weapons being a danger to, an existential danger to Israel, all along since the JCPOA for the past 10 years. Suddenly you're not worried anymore about Iran getting nuclear weapons, which it may be about to do. Why are you suddenly not interested?
Let me remind you that this regime has been vowing for a long period of time, way before JCPOA, to eliminate Israel and Satan. And by the way, that's the regime that also attacked Mecca, the holiest site of the Sunni world and the Muslim world. So let us not pretend. We know exactly what we are dealing with. This is a radical, dangerous regime that oppresses his own people. Everybody knows that.
It has nothing to do whether you like Iran or not like Iran. I'm talking purely from a geopolitical, dispassionate, resulting side after your attack on Iran and Donald Trump's attack on Iran. I don't have to love Iran to say that. We also know that MBS has called out Israel as a genocidal place. Why do Israelis still go on about the Abraham Accords with respect to Saudi Arabia, when if anything, one could expect Saudi Arabia now to seek nuclear weapons to protect Saudi Arabia and, as you say, the holiest sites of Islam from a Israeli attack on Saudi Arabia? And certainly those that talk about a greater Israel in Netanyahu's coalition want to invade Saudi Arabia, according to what they've said.
Well, nobody wants to invade Saudi Arabia, but I can assure you that in the inner circles of the Saudi government, nobody shed a tear to see the Iranian regime beaten so hardly.
And the Saudi Arabian government's official position was to condemn the Israeli bombing. And as you know, the United States could not use any of its bases in Saudi Arabia or the UAE.
I doubt that very much, but just the same, you know, in the end of the day, we are looking at, as you say, geostrategic. Saudi Arabia knows exactly who is their enemy and who is their friend. And let me share with you a secret. The Saudis are by far much more concerned about the Iranian regime than Israel, because, reminding you again, it's Iran that attacked physically Saudi Arabia, causing a significant damage to its oil infrastructure. It's Iran that attacked the Mecca holy sites, and it's the Iranian regime that vows to eliminate the rule of Saudi.
When did Iran attack Mecca?
It was a couple of times, 2019, 2020. There has been missiles launched, as you probably
have. I think I was living in Iran at that time. I didn't see that. Anyway, obviously, as I said, the opinion of most of the world is that it's a genocidal state that you worked for as an Israeli intelligence official. What was your reaction, and what's the reaction over there to the fact that even the New York Times is promoting the Jewish genocide scholar Omer Bartov? He says, and this was promoted all around the NATO world, that what you're doing is genocide. No real consciousness in Israel as the genocide continues in Gaza of what all around the world is obvious. You don't think it's a genocide in Gaza, do you?
No, it's not a genocide in Gaza. It's a very tragic
What do you think of Omer
Bartov?
What do you think of this professor of genocide studies?
Mr. Olmert made a very not wise comment, but let me say something about this genocide. You know, in the end of the day, we all know who has to be bear responsibility, and this is Hamas. Hamas is holding his own people as a shelter. Hamas launched this war. Hamas is using his people as a shelter. And you know, you're talking about genocide, and you, of course, I have a different perspective. I respect your opinion, which is, of course, totally wrong. But let me tell you something. You know, as long as
people for Hamas, I don't think.
No, as long as people in the world will continue to
accept. You supported Hamas when you were an intelligence official, presumably.
No, not necessarily. I didn't know that you are so familiar with my career, but that may surprise you to know that. But here is the point: as long as you will continue to accept Hamas and label Israel as the ultimate evil. I want to share with you something from deep my work, but you cannot quote me. You're not going to help the Palestinians by doing that. Actually, what you're doing is totally the opposite. The more you are supporting Hamas and exempting Hamas from responsibility, the more the Palestinian will pay the price, the more Israel will pay the price. Let me just remind you that the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas himself, was cursing Hamas in a very tough language, basically holding Hamas responsible for the catastrophe it has inflicted upon its brothers and sisters.
Yeah, just to say, I obviously don't support Hamas. It's Israel that was funding Hamas all this time. Avi Melamed, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US-EU armed genocide in Gaza. We'll be back on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.